Black Facts and Driven by Truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Mark Hashek.
Mark Hashek.
Carrie Simpson.
I am not responsible for anything that happens tonight. I'm going to make that very clear.
Don't look at me.
Disclaimer. No. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Extraordinarily busy, but all in a good way.
That's good.
Well, it's sort of, but that means I'm probably getting into good trouble,
right.
which is good too, right?
Yeah. You're always getting into trouble.
Yeah, but usually it's good trouble, so that's all good, right?
Yeah, you're all over Google.
Yeah, Google alert. Don't put my name on a Google alert. Yeah, we've been having a little bit of fun, but that's another story for another day. How has your week been, Mark Hashek?
Very busy, as always, but yeah, I can't complain. Looking forward to the show tonight. We got some great guests.
It is a busy lineup tonight, and an important lineup. And I was laughing because I was, when I got the announcement, I'm going, okay, Gary Mauser, right wing, Steve Anderson. Well, of course, some of our techies say, they have, these left wing leanings. So we got a lefty there, Bill Thielen. Our favorite left wing, but I appreciate him so much. Two thumbs up. The techies are going down. No, but you know what? Bill has brought a form of redemption. Is that the proper word to the left in his willingness to bring truth and sensibility to issues around the HST? Is that fair?
I think so.
I do too.
Yeah, I was reading something that Bill wrote today, and I was nodding in agreement. I almost fell off my chair.
You know, that's been happening to me, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, is this a phenomenon that's starting to happen where common sensibilities start to prevail over political pigeonholes?
We can only hope and pray.
Well, that would change the dynamics of the political landscape here in Canada, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
And then last we have Renee Schmitz, and we're back to the right. So I think we have an extraordinarily balanced show, as we always do here on Roadkill Radio, Mark Hashek.
Yes.
We're always balanced.
Yeah,
and when we're not, we admit it.
Right.
So it's all good.
Yeah. Truth in advertising.
Yeah. Guilty as charged is how.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We just keep doing that, right?
Yeah.
All right. So the first guest tonight is going to, I'm sure, ignite some great discussion. But just the lineup for tonight, let's go through that. As I said, we have a great balance of left and right, or maybe what we should just say is we have a whole show of common sense.
Hear, hear.
All right. Renee Schmitz is going to be by a little bit later. She's from Canadian Nurses for Life. And people will ask, and this is an important question, people, why would a representative from Canadian Nurses for Life be on Roadkill Radio?
Why?
Well, I'm going to tell you why. Because increasingly, the polarization of political issues is now creeping and steeping its way into everyday life and jobs, Mark Hashek.
Mm-hmm.
We have marriage commissioners now that are being asked to officiate over same-sex marriages. Some people don't want to do that. So there's court cases that are being done as we speak. We have people now being asked to be involved in performing the termination of the lives of a baby in the form of an abortion. Some nurses, some doctors don't want to do this. You know, these are creating positions within our everyday lives and jobs and occupations that are making for political and dilemmas of conscience, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I say is that these people have a right to say no. Think about the pharmacists. We've had Pharmacists for Life on here. What about the morning after pill? Should a pharmacist be forced to prescribe drugs that they know will kill a baby?
I would say no.
Ah, but their profession says yes. So lots of very important discussions on that point, discussions that I don't think most people realize are happening. And again, paying for, because courts, every time the court door opens, it's my money and your money, Mark.
Right.
I don't know. I'm getting tired of that.
Yep.
All right. Bill Thielen. Well, what can we say about Bill Thielen? Bill Thielen is outspoken.
Yeah.
He makes his point known, and he makes his points known politically, usually behind the scenes, though. So,
right.
Bill is a longtime political activist, a longtime commentator, a longtime strategist. He's hubnubbed with the high and mighty.
You see his name popping up everywhere. He's an interesting guy. I can't wait to talk to him. I've never talked to Bill before.
Well, and you know, the last time we had Bill on this show, and I should remind our audience of this, Bill put us on hold to watch the end of the Canucks game. Now, I know you're probably not going to feel that that is inappropriate. You would probably do the same.
Well, it depends what game it was.
Oh, I see. Okay, well then maybe between you and Bill you can explain to me the standards upon which one will postpone an interview when right. watching a Canucks game, Mark. Obviously there is a standard that's associated with this.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a left-right divide there.
No,
I think it would be purely hockey, so.
Oh, okay. So it's all good.
Well, like I said, I have to know what game it is.
All right. Well, then we have Steve Anderson, and he, of course, is one of the founders and executive director for Open Media. He was our guy that was supposed to be here last week, but obviously got so wrapped up and enamored with what was happening before the CRTC that he, too, had to postpone a little bit of Roadkill Radio. So I have talked to him this afternoon, and he's assured me that he will be here, bells on, and giving us the goods about what's gone on in Ottawa with the CRTC hearings and what people should be aware of. And I think sort of there needs to be a conscious awareness, if that could be the term, about our freedom to communicate with each other via the internet, because yeah. a lot is at stake here.
I'm glad that we're going to hear from Steve tonight, because when we couldn't get a hold of him, when he didn't appear as scheduled last week, and knowing how he speaks truth to power, I was concerned for his safety, but he sounds like he's okay, and he's going to be back here to talk to us about the dangers of big government.
Well, there you go. You mean the conspiracy theory was just kicking in big time there.
Well, he's here tonight, so I'm just happy. I'm happy as all.
Well, and we will put those questions to him, Mark. That's a, you know, and actually I've had this discussion with other people, because some of us that speak truth, you know, this does become a concern, and it is funny because you just sort of live with the territory. But there was a time, and you may be shocked and surprised to know this, that the international socialists were such a threat to my health and well-being that I was assigned private protection by the RCMP.
Wow.
Yeah. In Canada. Go figure that. Hmm. And what was my big crime, you would ask? I supported parental rights in public education.
So, how dare you?
Well, I know. And so if that is the crime that constitutes...
Off with her head.
Yeah. Imagine what Steve Anderson is guilty of, right? Internet freedom? Oh, my goodness. All right. But first up, an individual who is well known to both of us, an individual who has put himself out there and is consistent with what we like here at Roadkill Radio. That is consistency and logic and common sense. That would be a Professor Gary Mauser. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening.
Good evening to you, yes.
Well, we've got Mark Hasek here, and we've got echoing backgrounds. Can you hear us okay?
It's a little bit faint, but yes, I can hear you.
All right. Gary, we're gearing up for what we have all been anticipating, long and overdue, ridding our wonderful country of this so-called gun registry. Do you actually see this on the horizon? Is this something that's actually going to be realized?
Yes, I know it's shocking, a political party that actually keeps its promise to do something. But yes, the conservatives promise, and it looks as if they will deliver on the abolishment of the long gun registry sometime this fall.
Gary, I've talked to you before about the registry. I've been a long critic of the registry. For the benefit of our listeners, just break down why you believe and why I believe. And I'm going to refer to the registry in the past tense for the rest of our interview.
You are an optimist, aren't
you? No, it's scrapped. It's gone. If it doesn't, there'll be a revolution. Come on.
So okay, and you will head up the revolution.
I'll have up the revolution.
You and Gary Mauser, right? Yeah.
Gary, can you break down, for the benefit of our listeners, why the registry was a bad idea and why it should be scrapped?
Okay, well, Canada has long had strict gun control back since the 30s. Handguns were registered. And in order to buy a handgun, one had to go to your local police station and talk to the police and be certified as a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But hunting rifles and hunting shotguns had been considered no more dangerous than axes or knives or chainsaws, and those were not subject to the same kind of control. But in 77, a police permit was required for rifles and shotguns. In 91, a training course was required before one could get a permit to purchase a shotgun or a rifle. All this was first-time kind of introductions. But in 95, the Liberals decided to turn logic on its head and force the long gun registry upon people and register for the first time long guns, rifles and shotguns. Now, there's about 500,000 up to a million handguns that are registered. But when the Liberals decided to register long guns, there were somewhere between 15 and 30 million long guns in Canada owned by something like 4 or 5, maybe even 7 million Canadians that had never been registered. So this was a large undertaking for data entry, for compliance that had never been asked before. And many otherwise reasonable people thought this was one step too far. So it appears, as much as the data can tell us, that only about half of law-abiding Canadians decided to cooperate with the long gun registry.
Unbelievable.
They just thought that was an imposition that made no sense, ridiculous cost, and so people just wouldn't go along. So one reason why the long gun registry is a failure is because the people who must comply don't want to comply.
Right.
There's no way the police can force a population to submit to a law except by brutal force if the people don't want to do it, whether it's a drug law, gun law, sex law, whatever. It is really difficult to get people to do what they don't want to do.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of the registry, but I want to take a step back for a second. The registry was a direct result, in my opinion, and the opinion of many people, from the Call Polytechnique massacre. And
the Call Polytechnique massacre back in the late 80s motivated both the conservatives under Mulroney and the Liberals under Chrétien to introduce gun laws. Both the 91 gun law and the 95 gun law were the direct result of that. That's right.
Now, my question to you, as someone who not only studies the facts, the figures, the stats, but the culture, where does this inevitable scrapping, because the registry will be gone in the fall, where does this put the anti-gun movement in this country? How far does it set it back, and what will be their next move? It seems to me like this is a huge blow to them, and I can't really figure out where they'd go from here. They'll probably maybe concentrate more on cities. Is that how you see it?
Well, let's take a step back. Canada's gun law is much more complicated than just the long gun registry.
Sure.
So while I agree with you 100% that this is historic, very few governments have come to power claiming they will roll back gun laws and then actually do it. That's a huge step. But it still leaves open a large number of other ways in which one could tighten up gun laws. The first one is obviously if the federal government doesn't have a interest in registering long guns, then provinces may well want to step in the breach. And Quebec, Ontario have said that they are considering it. BC has said nothing yet, and so that suggests that they are considering it, or they may be. And many other provinces have said it's ridiculous and are not about to play this game. So that's one possible way that the anti-gun can get involved, and others are could probably tighten up the police the police restrictions in other ways.
In Vancouver, we've had the police chief, Jim Chu, come out very strongly in favor of the gun registry. And back in September of 2010, when a vote went to Parliament, a bill went to Parliament to kill the registry, it eventually died 153 to 151 due to the Liberals getting whipped in the House of Parliament. During that debate, Jim Chu, our police chief in Vancouver, came out very strongly for the registry. He was doing that because this was a very cheap way for police to gather information on people without them having to use their own resources. Do you think we'll see a movement among law enforcement in this country to push for more regulation on gun control?
I do think so, as well as following the British example of more cameras strategically placed so that people are recorded when they're in public, as well as stonewalling any attempts to find out information about police decisions, practices, or mistakes. For example, in the United States, on websites, we can find how many guns have been lost, stolen, or misplaced from police departments,
mm-hmm.
but no place in Canada can you find that out about the RCMP or any provincial police force.
Gary, and why wouldn't they just publish that information? I mean, this is, quite honestly, I find in Canada here, unless there's a movement afoot to say, wait a minute, you know, this is the kind of information the public demands and pushes back a little bit. I mean, Canadians seem so complacent on so many fronts to sort of let their liberties and their privacy, you know, be invaded upon, whether it's cameras or, you know, their kindergarten students getting, you know, information from UBC data collectors even, you know, that this information to find out what's going on in the lives of the private citizens seems to be a national occupation with bureaucrats of all stripes and badges, if you will. Why wouldn't Canadians demand to know what the responsibility and accountability for our police enforcement officials are? Why wouldn't we want to know how many guns are being lost and what's really going on within our forces?
That's a great question, but Canadians have not so asked, and parliamentarians have not pushed on their behalf. We don't know about internal spending decisions by the CBC nor the police. We do not know how the police allocates its money amongst all the various things that they could do. They have really lost control. The people have lost control of these institutions, yet we are not able to bring them back into control. There are numerous active groups attempting to do this, and as yet it is all a failure.
Gary.
Yes.
As a gun owner, and I'm speaking for myself, I know that the people who are most interested in responsible gun control are gun owners. So you look at the amount of money we've wasted on this registry. It was sold to us as something that would be cost about $2 million and then pay for itself. It's on about $2 billion and counting now. The last figures I saw, it costs roughly $66 million a year just to operate. Again,
it's very hard to get these kind of figures. You're quite right about the 66, but if you look a little bit deeper, you can see numbers like 80 or 120 million a year, and it all depends on what's being included in the statement, and it is really difficult to know. The best estimate is that the government spends somewhere between 80 and 140 million on the licensing and registration systems. Provinces and territories spend some others, And the implications of these costs are that other parts of the federal government has to bear some burden. We don't know how much it costs. And the public spends an uncountable number of hours and money trying to conform with all these complex rules. And the biggest danger is that the police are focusing on paper shuffling when they could and should be doing something about organized crime, whether it's gangland violence or money laundering or international smuggling. The police are lost in small games of paper rather than bigger numbers.
Well, that leads to my question. With all this money, say we'll go with the $66 million figure, what would you like to see those resources go into as far as actual enforcement of real crimes, real gun crimes?
Real policing.
Well, it's exactly right. I think we need more cooperation amongst the various police departments in order to go after gangland crime. We need to stop focusing on the assumption that every one of us are potential criminals or potential suicides, and start looking at the people who have track records. For example, when your car is stopped for speeding, your license plate and name is run through the firearms database. It's a high priority for the police to know if you're a gun owner or not. They do not know if you have a criminal record. They do not check to see if you're on probation. They do not check to see if you're a child molester. They do check to see if you own a firearm. That's crazy.
Well, one of the things I could never understand about the registry was the argument that police relied on it before they entered a home. Now, that presupposes that the police would act differently approaching that home if the registry said there were no guns in the house, which is ridiculous.
Which is exactly ridiculous. At least half of the law-abiding people, formerly law-abiding people who have guns, have never registered, as well as criminals and scofflaws of all levels. So if you, and constables do, they tell me they trust the registry, although older, wiser police don't, but they actually do believe it. In information tech terms, this is garbage in, gospel out. Too many of us, not just police, tend to trust computer-generated displays, even if what went in was totally garbage.
Gary, I am trying to wrap my head around this because, you know, all of this just defies common sense.
Yes, it does.
You know, are we, again, in the throngs of, you know, job creation as opposed to police exercising their proper role in our society? Is it easier to shuffle paper and file names and plug in names to computers and all the rest of it than actually do real policing? Is that what's about here?
Well, what we're seeing is a deliciously disgusting example of government at work. It's not limited to guns and crime and police, of course, but the various bureaucracies, police in this case, love to use whatever emotional issue they can grab a hold on to grow, swell, increase their power, increase their size and budgets. And once they are entrenched in this new power, they reach for more power. Isn't this an old story? And this is certainly the case with here. Part of the reason the gun registry costs so much is the police, nor the Justice Department in the federal level, knew how to build a computer system to try to make sense out of the 15 to 30 million firearms that they were faced with. And it grew like topsy. Part of it is a standard litany of people being more interested in their personal power than the public good.
Gary, how do you think this is going to affect guns, gun ownership, hunting in Canada as we go forward? Do you see a bit of a renaissance? Do you see a spike in gun ownership? I know that I have a couple of friends who aren't gun owners at this point, but are looking forward to becoming gun owners when the registry is scrapped.
I suspect, before you answer, Gary, that your friends will come out of the closet. At least their guns will.
What do you think, Gary?
I think both of those are ideas are right on. Many people will now admit that they own guns and come back into the hunting and target shooting and responsible gun community. Many of these people are property owning farmers, judges. I've had judges tell me that they don't register their guns.
Can I go on record right now on online? Can I say that right now? I have a couple of in my no, I won't say that. It's a couple of months yet.
No, well, yeah, not yet.
Listen,
even more importantly is the question about people starting into hunting and starting into gun ownership. You realize that not only are gun owners very responsible citizens, but also they are the people who support conservation.
Absolutely.
You know,
Most of conservation is funded by hunting and hunters.
Ducks Unlimited.
Yes?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, Gary, because my daughter is a gold medalist in pentathlon, and of course. Air pistol is one of those disciplines. And, you know, I have to say all my kids are very well versed in proper gun ownership and the safety regulations. And I have never met a group of people as they progress through the various disciplines involved in air pistol competitions and such. There is no group that is more responsible, more safety oriented, more disciplined than those that run, you know, anything affiliated with gun ownership or gun usage.
That's exactly right. And research supports your friendship and family's style and habits, because several research studies, some by people who initially were anti-gun, have studied gun owners and come away amazed at the responsibility and the skill level and the high level of citizenship that gun ownership imbues in people.
Gary, I want to ask you, how do you see this coming down? Like, when is the bill going to be introduced? What kind of backlash are we going to have? What kind of flick-flack in the media? Because I assume that there will be some hysterical commentary, you know, that will accompany this decision by the conservatives to abolish the gun registry. What is the time frame, and how is all this going to come to fruition?
I'm told that abolishing the gun registry will be one of the first bills brought forward in the new parliament when it meets this fall, that it will be a repeat of Candace Hepner's private members bill, mm-hmm. that the gun registry will be abolished. There will be in this bill a poison pill that will keep provinces from introducing their own minor provincial attempts at a long gun registry. And I do think, as you suggest, that there will be a lot of hysterical screaming and moaning. The issue that came up repeatedly during the Candace Hepner's bill discussion was spousal homicide. And somehow the long gun registry has been instrumental in reducing spousal homicides, although that's completely bogus. So I expect a lot of people will be frightened by the hordes of angry gun owners going around shooting their spouses if this bill passes.
Gary, you touched, during that debate there was also some real over-the-top rhetoric surrounding suicides. And I know that in your report a few years back, you analyzed that topic. Can you tell us about the relationship between suicides and the gun laws?
That's right. One of the arguments for stricter gun control is that it is supposed to reduce suicide. In Canada, suicide is primarily with gas and hanging. Guns are a very minor tool that's used. And if you look over the past 20 years of suicide rates, there's been no impact on suicide rates by any of the gun laws that have been introduced. Suicide rates have been gradually declining, but at a rate that is pretty consistent and not dependent upon gun laws. That's good that suicide is declining. There's two reasons for this. most of suicide is aboriginal, which is depressing to consider, and it is suicide is declining primarily because economic conditions and social conditions are improving on reserves. So really, gun laws have little to do with suicide rates, whether they are easier or not so easy to get a hold of.
Go ahead, Carrie.
I just want to say, Gary, because I get so tired of all the rhetoric that does exist when we move in a direction of what I view as being common sense and sensibility. I am so opposed to creating jobs within the bureaucracy that cost taxpayers, the already overburdened taxpayers, even more when there's no legitimate justification for such. And, you know, one of the things here at Roadkill Radio, what we like to do, Gary, is to really equip people with the responses to the nonsense, to the nonsensical rhetoric that will just light up, I'm sure, some of the, you know, the mainstream, or as we refer to it, the downstream media on this. What are the best comebacks people can come? I mean, obviously, it's prove it you start on this nonsense. You know, what has happened to the murder rates and those kinds of things associated with long guns? Is there a provable benefit that even begins to justify having something like the long gun registry in existence?
There's no a benefit at all from the gun laws. They give police, like drug laws, more powers to harass otherwise innocent people. And it is really not a benefit to society. It doesn't reduce crime rates or anything. Gun ownership is one index of self-control and individual responsibility. We're seeing in society a greater demand for control and a shrinking sense of individual responsibility. So we need in our society to work for ways to teach young people to be more self-sustaining, and certainly gun ownership and teaching young people to learn about guns is one of the ways that we could do that.
Hey, you're talking my language. Know how to milk a cow and how to shoot a moose.
Gary,
yes?
Touching on the cultural aspects of the gun registry, it seemed to me that it was the people who were, and I'm generalizing now, but the people who supported the gun registry, by and large, seem to be people from urban areas, mainly southern Ontario and definitely in Quebec. Where I'm originally from, in the Maritimes, there are some pockets that were very opposed to it. And out west, of course, Alberta, on the prairies, more rural areas were against it. Is it that simple to say that it was almost, and I, to use the cliche, a kind of an urban elite piece of legislation? Because Alan Rock, the man behind the whole deal, certainly fits that description. Was it kind of a culture clash here in Canada, similar to what we see in the States, where you have urban versus rural, west versus east?
It's an urban-rural split, and if you look at your basic sociology, the ways in which people differ one from another, you've got sex, religion, income, and region, and rural-urban is one of the basic human divisors, and that's one of the factors here. We have the urban elites, and the Liberal Party in its waning decades under Chrétien and Martin, saw that it had natural allies with the feminists in the large urban areas and the immigrants who they thought of as sheep and chattel that they could move around, and the urban intellectual crowd. One of those funny things is that the greater the years one spends in school, the further one gets away from common sense, and over-educated people tended to support gun control. So that tends to be a high urban kind of person with a standard low average Canadian outside of the urban areas. So that was one of the big political divisors.
Well, I really believe that this registry was a blueprint for confiscation. I really believe that it was a one big step in a vision by by those same elites, led by former Justice Minister Alan Rock, who went on record saying he didn't think there should be private gun ownership, essentially, in Canada, that only police and military personnel should be allowed to own firearms. So I believe this was a blueprint, and I never thought I would see the day. I must say, I never thought I'd see the day when this registry would be scrapped. I'm not a fan of the Harper government, but I have to give it to them on this one. They did live up to their promise. And I have to give it to people like...
they haven't yet, Mark.
Oh, they will. They will. And I have to give it to people like Gary Mauser as well, because without smart academics like Mauser and others who kept this issue alive and who kept putting the real data out there, I don't think we'd be here in this position today. So thank you, Gary.
Well, thank you very much. I have a much lower vision of politics than that. I think getting rid of it is just good politics, and setting it up was also just good politics. And I have a great faith in this kind of common sense. I love it. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Gary, for being here. And you know what? I am still not completely convinced that this thing's going. I'll believe it when I see the signed bill, Mark and Gary. Okay, I think we're moving in that right direction, but you know, a lot can happen between now and then, right?
That's right. A bird in the hand and all that. I believe that too.
So time will tell, but I'll tell you, on the day that they actually sign it, Gary Mauser, we will have you back, and I will bring the champagne, okay?
I'll be happy to come back. Thanks for having me on tonight.
And then all those guns can come out of the closet.
Thanks, Gary.
Good night, Gary.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, there is something so refreshing, and who would ever thought, Mark, that it would be over gun ownership, about a government actually just moving in a direction that's just rooted in common sense and logic.
I love it. And like I said, this was something I would never have bet on in a million years, and it does give you faith for someone like me who always felt to be on the periphery, on the outside of the political debate in this country. When something like this happens, I do, for a moment, have some faith in my public officials. So.
You on the periphery. Mm. Now, there's a thought.
Right. The fringe.
Sitting on the edge.
Right. The ether.
With your gun.
I don't have any guns.
No. Not you, nor me.
No.
No, nor anybody that I know.
Or
all those people that were involved in the gun club, nada.
Right.
No, absolutely not, people.
I hate guns.
No, we despise guns. we would never consider guns, would we?
You know, to get serious for a second again. Just one last point.
We have to get serious. Wait, let me put my serious up.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I am surprised that the pro-gun lobby in Canada has not attached, and maybe they have, but I haven't seen it, has not attached the tragedy in Norway with the upcoming vote on the gun registry. But wait and see.
You'll give them an idea. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, when we started this segment, if I had had more time, I would have looked for the gun laws in Norway, right? Because
Scandinavia, very strict gun laws, way stricter than what we have here. We have, still with the gun registry, we had some of the most lax gun laws in developed countries.
So. Wait a minute. So what you're suggesting then is that this tragedy was allowed to transpire even with tough gun legislation?
Well, one of our crew off camera here just told me that all the guns that wacko nut job scumbag used in Norway were registered. So there you go.
Do we need to say more? And that, you know what, that's one of the logical arguments that have been just so part and parcel to this whole discussion, is that wacko nut jobs are going to use whatever is available to them, legal or not legal. It's not the people who are going to be law-abiding citizens that are going to be involved in these kinds of issues. I just, you know, the whole thing, and I have to just end this because I know our next guest is waiting, but, you know, we had a very tragic situation in a home next door to where I live, where one of the young boys there committed suicide. And I was obviously there. I saw the ambulances arrived and went over to help the family, unbeknownst to me what the circumstances were and the tragedy and of those circumstances. But what was interesting was the parents were treated as suspects immediately. Mm-hmm. And then all they could focus on was whether or not the guns were registered, right? Because the young man had used a handgun, which was illegal. But all the other guns, the long guns, were registered and legal. And I thought, boy, you know, this is, their whole focus was on going downstairs and making sure the cabinet was locked appropriately and in continuity with the requirements. And they must have spent probably, you know, an hour and a half just going through that exercise, rather than the issues around what was really going on in this family. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, the whole circumstance was just so bizarre, and this just added to how bizarre the situation was, you know. I could tell other stories about individuals with mental health illnesses that were given the right to own a gun, even though that there were issues and evidence available that individual would be dangerous right. with a gun. The registry made no sense on any front, and when the day comes, and in the very near future, I will bring that bottle of champagne.
Good riddance.